Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Welcome, everybody. It's the future. Actually, really, no. This is an evergreen episode of the Macko and Cos podcast. We're taping this a couple days before Monday because Bob is traveling. He's a busy man. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. In the future. Future looks great.
These flying cars. I got to tell you, I was worried because I don't think a lot of people are great drivers, especially BMW drivers, when they got four tires on asphalt. So I figured once we're all flying through the air, it would be worse. But it's pretty good.
So I realize as I'm about to say this, I am leaving myself open to be ripped because it's about cars and I don't drive.
What?
I had an amazing driving experience last week. I was in the backseat of a Tesla, fancy ass car. You know, like the DeLoreans that have the V wings that open up?
Yeah.
So I got in that way and it was self-driving. I mean, I was in the back seat.
This is the closest to you ever driving a car is you're in a self-driving
car. I don't need to drive. In 5 years, this is going to be self-driving cars. It was wild, Matt. Mm-hmm. I was in a car with George and someone we work with named Raquel. Mm-hmm. And it was me in the back. And we were just following traffic. The GPS controls it. It was a little stoppy-starty.
Yeah.
But his hands were off the wheel, his feet were off the pedals, and we were driving in traffic, baby.
See, here's what I wonder about that is how you experience that as a non-driver. Because I think for me, it would be so weird off the top because, you know, a sense of control has been taken away. I mean, you know, I treat driving like I'm an NFL head coach. I want complete control over the situation. But now you'd be sitting there and you'd be out of control or you lack any. That would be a weird feeling.
Yeah, you make a good point. I don't know what it would be like for you, but to me it wasn't so different. Cause
yeah, just another drive.
I felt like it was at a ride in Wonderland or something. Yeah. The way it always does.
Yeah.
But it was pretty neat being in a car and it was driving itself.
Yeah.
So also getting into a car where the doors open upwards.
That's great.
Oh my God.
That would be so cool.
I'm not a car guy to the point where I can't drive, man.
Yeah.
And so for me to say, wow, that was a cool car experience, you know it had to be good.
I would want.
And it had no engine. It was battery powered.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know what I want? I want to get in one of those cars just where the DeLorean door comes up and get out and just proclaim, roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Nice.
By the way, have I ever told you, we're going to do listener questions. Again, it's an evergreen episode of the Macko and Cos podcast. Have I ever told you my theory that Back to the Future is the single most anti-Semitic film of all time?
No, but I'm dying to hear it.
So you have here's a lesson in life. If you ever get the ability to travel back in time, of your top two things you're going to do, one of them, shouldn't it be to murder Hitler? Like, shouldn't that always, like the other one could be whatever you want. I want to see the Egyptian pyramids be built. Whatever the other one is, but the one of them at least that's all I'm asking. At no point. And Back to the Future, is there even a cursory discussion of, I don't know, Doc. I would like to watch my parents dance in high school. Maybe we can kill the Fuhrer as a child, and then we can go and, go to Middle America in the mid-1950s.
That is a provocative take, and I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to argue, though, when you lay out the argument.
Yeah. And
wow.
Okay, and you know what?
I don't know if I'd call it anti-Semitic, necessarily.
Okay, so that's the difference between you and I. I'm willing to go to the places that the others won't. And, okay, part one, hey, you didn't do it. You wanted to watch, your parents make out. Who doesn't? Okay, so then part two. You know how part two is? What their mission is in part two? Do you remember Back to the Future part
two? I don't
know
if I've ever seen part two.
Their mission is that Marty's son gets in with a bad bunch of kids, and he gets in trouble with the law. So Doc Brown is like, Marty, we got to go to the future because your son is going to be arrested for basically vandalism. And Marty's like, oh God, well, we better go to the future. At some point, right when Doc Brown said roads, we're going to don't need roads. If I'm Marty, I'm like, hey, before we go to the future and help my son out with his, disorderly thing. Maybe now we can go to, say, 1930 and kill Hitler. Again, not even a discussion.
So they got a mulligan, and they screwed it up again.
Yes.
Because how often does life really give you a second chance?
Yes. And then in the third one, it's like, well, we're just going to hang in the Old West. Hey, great. After the Old West, in the 1800s, let's go ahead about 110 years, murder Hitler, and then move on with our time.
That's a really great point, Matt. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it. I do feel like it would change the film a lot.
Maybe the tone would change a bit.
I feel like it'd probably be a little less lighthearted.
Maybe, okay, slightly. I'm not saying that the movie, you'd have to get a script doctor in to,
Adjustments need to be made.
Adjustments need to be made.
But in the big picture, it's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do.
Quickly, before we move on to listener questions, you know how everything gets remade these days?
Yeah.
Literally everything. I mean, even Archie becomes Riverdale, where they do a darker version of it.
Okay, I just found out about that show.
Right.
And, okay, sorry, continue.
Yeah, so before you rant on that, let me throw this out. Why has no one remade City Slickers?
Oh.
A classic comedy with Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short, where these three guys
were... Whoa, that's Three Amigos, Bob.
Or Three Amigos. Okay. Why has no one remade Three Amigos? Thanks for correcting
me. Yeah.
But still, my point is the same. Okay. Why has no one remade it?
All right, let's think about this here. I might have to stand, because it's a great point. So who would we have for the Three Amigos?
Great question.
Okay. I'm going to
Hang on. Let's get our casting pan out.
Okay. Channing Tatum is, can do the physical stuff and is funny. I think Channing Tatum.
So he's the Chevy Chase? Would have to be the Chevy Chase because Chevy Chase is the lead.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So who's the adorable guy?
The adorable one, Zach Galifianakis. His weight fluctuates all over the place. He's and maybe actually hurts him a little bit.
And kind of like the same character he basically played in the Hangover.
Yeah.
So who's Steve Martin?
Is Steve Carell too old?
He's probably a little too old.
He's probably a little too old.
If you're going to cast those other two guys.
Yeah. Seth Rogen?
Seth Rogen's not bad.
What about Seth
Rogen? Danny McBride's pretty good.
Danny McBride.
Craig Robinson?
Yes, because we got to get a little bit more diversity. Craig Robinson, great choice.
Craig Robinson would actually be really funny. Have you seen him in Mr. Robot? He's very good.
Yeah. Now who plays what was the villain's name?
El Wapo.
Oh, he's infamous. Oh, that means he's infamous.
Exactly. So who could be that character? You would need someone who could be a little bit older, bit devious.
I was thinking Aziz Ansari. I don't know why that name came to mind, just because he's very funny.
Actually, Aziz Ansari would probably be one of the good amigos.
Yeah, he could be one of
He'd be a really good amigo.
Okay, you know what? If we can't get one of the other ones, he's on our backup list.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's throw this out to the audience, because since we don't have any sports takes, because we are in the future.
We're in the future.
This out to you? We're recasting the Three Amigos for the future, because it's the future episode of the pod. So who should the Three Amigos be?
Ooh, one other thought for the villain, because by the way, one of our top fives in the future, top five films that need to be remade.
Okay.
Paul Giamatti as the villain.
He'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
He'd be pretty good. All right. I like that too.
Yeah.
It's funny. Whenever we talk movies, I always get a little serious. Like, even though we're goofing around, I'm like, okay, let's think about this.
Well, the funniest is you're actually writing down all the names.
Of course I am. Matt, I do this for a living.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
I'm like the guy who's trying to get the business cards of the dads through the kids at school. So what does your dad do for a living? Oh, that's interesting. Does he have a card?
Really?
Well, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hollywood, Matty. Yeah. Hollywood. Where I am right now, weirdly enough.
Right now, you're in Los Angeles, and I'm here in Toronto.
So eerie.
Are you going to go to Disneyland, by the way?
I went last time, and my kid's not coming. And if you go to Disneyland by yourself as a guy, midweek, questionable.
Are you going on your own to California?
No, I'm going with a team, Matt. Okay, but dedicated
Sandra
team.
Is your... Oh, I guess... Someone has to
Life
take
goes on. Because here's the difference.
Here we go.
You open the door for me, Matt. See, those of us who are married, right?
Yeah.
Like, kids go to school.
Oh.
They can't go, hey, you know what would be fun? Mm. Whatever I like. Why don't I do that?
Work for Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, I know. That's right.
Huh. Well, hey, hold on. Wait a second. Amy, do you want to get married?
Not today, thank you.
She said no.
Yeah, you know what? You guys can get married and still go on a dime. It's when you have the kid.
Yeah.
Now you are 9 to 5.
So scale of 1 to 10 on the wrongness scale that that Amy and I have been to Disneyland multiple times, just the two of us.
Did you go as a couple?
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Okay. Okay. Because
a wrongness like what? You were in California and having fun, or Florida and having fun?
Yeah, we're in Orlando. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's not so bad. If you go as a couple, it's just like wandering around Disneyland by yourself. Like, would you ever go to Canada's Wonderland by yourself?
No. No. Oh, God, no. No.
Right. Why not?
Because, A, I'd be lonely. I'd be like standing in line by myself.
It's not even just that it's creepy. Yeah. It's sort of like sad. Like being at a, who wants to, I'm going to go on this roller coaster. Wee, hey.
The only way.
Nobody to share it with. How is that?
The only way I would be, you know, the Eric Cartman style, where I buy Canada's Wonderland for the sole purpose of kicking everyone out so I never have to wait in line, and I just get to run on all the rides by myself.
That does sound fun. And you know, I had that experience in Germany once where I had an amusement park to myself. So
yes.
It is pretty good. Matt, I'm curious. We're about 10 minutes in. Have we given the listeners one reason to keep listening? Like even one?
Bob, we recast the Three Amigos. So I think we gave them three
reasons.
Yeah,
and we did rewrite. We did rewrite... Back to the Future, right?
Yes, yes.
So that it became kind of like Inglourious Bastards.
Chelsea Darlington writes into the show. I mean, Back to the Future, really. They, I want to talk to the scriptwriters. Anyway, Chelsea Darlington, what was the most memorable celebrity / athlete interview you ever conducted and why?
Why don't you go first, Matt?
Well, it's because now I got to think of it, and it gives you...
You collected the questions. You didn't have time to think of it. You picked it.
Yeah, no, I didn't actually really, I didn't really think. Okay, you know what the first one I'm going
to... Did you get surprised by the question you picked?
A little bit. the first one I'm going to go...
Do you want me to answer?
No, I'll go most memorable. This is a sad answer, and I'll come up with another one, but the sad one, not in terms of quality of answer, but quality of celebrity. Ken Jennings.
Okay.
The star, the first real mega celebrity star from Jeopardy. And he joined the he came on Off the Record in like 2004. And at the time, I was watching that his whole run. And me and my Aunt Jane, we bonded on it. We'd watch it. Like when I was up at the cottage, we'd watch it. And I would call her, you know, during commercial breaks, because Ken Jennings would have $20,000 more than the next highest person. And there'd be Alex Trebek going, there's no drama on this show because everyone else has minus 500. When Ken came on, and then I interviewed him for the website, I have never been more fanboy, like ever in the history of Off the Record, than that time. Because I was a Ken, like I was the Chris Farley show. Ken, do you remember that time when you made that joke with Alex? And that to me was one of my most memorable. And it's a sad answer, you know, because, you know, he's not a big star. The other one I'd say.
That's not a sad answer. That's a great answer.
The other one, Chuck Palahniuk, when the writer of Fight Club.
Isn't it Palahniuk?
Palahniuk, yeah. This is not going to shock you, Bob. I get names screwed up. Because my favorite moment, I was able to stump him.
On his own book?
Yes, twice. Once I said, you could be poor, but you know, you'll be respected. Or you can be rich, but you're on Oprah's book club list. And that one kind of, because he was a little bit more anti-establishment. And eventually he said, you stumped me, but I'm going to have to go Oprah because I have children. And I'm like, damn you, Chuck. Use the kid card. And the other time I said, Chuck, a famous comedian once said, everything in the world is funny except for one thing, crib death. Your latest book is described as a comedy and it involves crib death. Explain. And he got a genuine laugh out of that. So for me, I got a thrill. So those are some of mine. What about you?
I think that's... Going down to Stamford, Connecticut to interview Vince McMahon after Owen Hart died in the ring was a pretty memorable experience.
Yep.
Meeting Vince on his own turf, getting a tour through the WWE studios and the whole setup there. I was pretty amazing. Shane McMahon hated us. Stephanie McMahon charmed us. And Vince ultimately used us. So
it's
that
the
was,
Trumps.
They were the Trumps.
You get charmed by the daughter. You don't like the son. And the father somehow cons you.
Somebody's calling. Oh. It's my business partner. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'll just get to it in a second. Okay. We got important things to get to here, yeah. Maddie.
That is a good one. Now, it's not as good as sitting in a green room with Ken Jennings, but your Vince McMahon story.
And also, bad. You probably forgot about this because you didn't have a lot of time to prepare for the answer you chose, but the time that Steve-O came on Off the Record with Party Man and Wee Man was the other one?
Wee Boy and I think Wee Man and Party Boy. Wee Man and Party Boy.
So they were really drunk.
Yep.
And we were recording at the Masonic Temple, which is a fancy old building in downtown Toronto, and it has all these beautiful things. Like there's a ballroom, like literally a ballroom in there with like the marble floor, and there's a gigantic antique chandelier hanging from the roof. And those guys were so plastered. I mean, they weren't kind of drunk. They were impossibly drunk.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring up the chandelier is because I was trying to get Steve-O, we're still trying to record a show, and I was trying to sober him up a bit. So I brought him in there to talk to him. And he goes, you know, I went to circus school. And he took this huge ladder and started balancing it on his chin. And he was wandering around the room, and the ladder was precariously close to destroying the antique chandelier. And I remembered thinking, Steve-O is going to ruin my career.
Yeah.
Like, this chandelier is going to go down. Someone's going to ask, how did this happen? I'm going to say, because I let this drunk idiot wander around with the ladder on his face. And I'm out of a job. Now, amazingly, he didn't. But the best part of the story, and I mean, like, they barfed on the floor.
Yep.
They, we shot about 3 minutes because the crew at the time, I was like, we can't do anything. The crew begged me. Let's just try something. I said, okay, well, let's put it on tape and see if we can use it. And to a man and woman, because we had a female guest booker. Yeah. So to a person, within 3 minutes, everyone's like, we can't use this.
Oh, yeah. And I remember
this is insane.
I remember this specific moment. Like, they were meandering. And
because they were plastered.
Yeah.
And they weren't drunk. They were absolutely plastered.
Steve-O mentioned something about, yeah, when kids, you know, send in tapes and they burn themselves, we actually get more sales. It was, and I'm paraphrasing, it was some sort of creepy line like that. And at the end, what did Steve-O, do you remember what his famous line at the end of that interview was?
I don't.
It was, he's like, guys, we didn't swear. And he said it triumphantly. He's like, that was totally airable. And we said, it sure was. And then we taped another show.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming by, guys. They were actually doing skateboard tricks over barf on the floor.
Yes.
And oh, yeah. My favorite moment of the whole thing was, I think I painted the picture of how drunk they were. I went out to where everybody would have a smoke, like the little smoking area, and they were talking contracts. So, like, Steve-O was talking, like, to an agent and saying, yeah, you know, if they're going to come back with that kind of percentage, that's not going to work for us. And, like, it was the eeriest, weirdest thing. He was too drunk to stand, but not too drunk to know what his residual points were on fore and back end.
Yeah. God, that was, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just one of the classic OTR tales.
Okay, so there you go. So off to a roaring start.
Yep. Logan Caswell writes in, who would you rather spend a week with locked inside a jail cell with only enough food for three meals, Bob or Michael Landsberg? And this question is weird. It's like, do you only get you get the same three meals a day?
So break this down for me. So it's only three total meals for one weekend.
Only enough, spend a week with only enough food for three meals.
I think that we should answer it as though you only have three meals, not three meals a day, because that's meals? A different thing.
Then it's Landsberg,
three
it's meals. Easy. It's Landsberg.
Because he wouldn't eat them.
Yeah, he wouldn't eat them. You know, and I mean, that's an easy one. No one's more afraid of food than he is.
That one's specifically for you, too.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, you could easily replace just Matthew. With, you know, replace Matthew with Bob and Bob with Matthew.
I'd probably rather spend it with you.
But the food thing. Like
the question's really about, would you rather deal with Landsberg or me? Because I'd eat all the food. Someone said to me the other day, because they watched me eating, and they said, wow, you eat like you're stoned. And I haven't smoked a joint since I was like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Not at least while I was sober. I had a couple when I was drunk.
That's very different. Yeah, when you tell that to the judge. Judge, I was drunk. Case dismissed. Free to go.
But I had to admit that this person was right. I do eat like I'm stoned. Quickly, like mm-hmm. someone's about to take it from me, and usually in odd combinations.
Or like stoned or the exact opposite of your last meal. I mean, I think that'd be the one time, like, maybe I'm going to chew a little bit slower on this one.
I think I could take Kobayashi in a speed eating contest. Like, it's not good for me, but I eat fast.
I have this image.
It's not the size, it's the velocity.
I have this image of you participating in one, and right before, Sandra's like, hug your daughter. And then he goes, Cece, hug your father. You might not see him again. You know, it's like they stand in the rickety old shack in the middle of the West as you go off to take on Kobayashi.
I can't tell you how many times I've walked by a pan, like a cookie pan that has chicken wings fresh out of the oven on it. And I'll walk back in 10 minutes later. It's like, they're gone. When did I do this?
Yeah.
When did I do this? It's like I have like food blackouts.
You're like Tyler Durden, you know. It's like, wait, how am I suddenly in this town? Yeah,
it's the strangest thing. This plate was full.
Mm-hmm. Kim writes in at Kim Alexander: pros and cons of Olympic hockey without the NHL.
Ooh, good question.
Yeah.
Well, the pro is that we would all hate to see a meaningful accident to a meaningful NHL player. How would we all feel about Austin Matthews getting hurt in a permanent way playing for the Olympics?
That'd be the worst.
Not so good, right?
By the way, the funny thing is, when the Leafs were bad, everyone in Toronto was like, come on, all the NHL players should play. What do we care? We don't have anyone going.
William Nylander, do you want to see him playing for Team Sweden getting hurt?
Mitch Marner and Matthews would both be, Matthews certainly would.
I also think that because it's the Olympics, like you love to see best on best, but the fact that it's the flag, people will get behind pretty much anything at the Olympics. Like you'll watch luge.
Yeah.
You know, you'll watch speed skating. Like we're not going to watch men's hockey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know any of the women on the women's team like during the year, but during those international big tournaments,
yeah,
they become heroes. So is it so far away to think that whoever's on that men's team, like, do you need to be a pro to be cared about?
Oh, no. Oh,
I don't think so.
No, and then it's the role of the broadcaster. You got to create stories. Tell us why we're rooting for this guy. And it's going to be the young up-and-coming player or the guy who's been out of the NHL and, you know, he wants one more chance of glory. Like, there's so many different storylines that you can sell it. So
And the whole argument that it doesn't count then because we won't care about it because it's not really best on best. The under-20s isn't best on best because Canada's best under-20 players are in the NHL.
And
we still care who wins.
And you would get the joy, if they won, the joy of seeing the underdog. Like the worst thing about the last Olympics, and you know, we talked about it, is that it was such perfect hockey. It was boring.
They were a remorseless zone-clearing machine.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, those are definitely the pros on it.
Now, the cons are the obvious. You want to see our best team play. You just want to see what the best team in the world would look like.
Yes, you want to see what the best team in the world looks like. And also, you get to know on a lot of days your team's going to crush everyone else. You know, Canada, unless a fluke happens, Canada's guaranteed to be playing for a medal in hockey. You know, and this could be the case where, you know, they could go out early. And that's just something we haven't seen in a while.
I wish, if they were going to do anything, I wish it would have become an under-25 tournament because that was floated at one point as a way to move forward. And I think we saw at the World Championships, that was really the only thing that was interesting is how the Young Guns team played. So maybe like a world tournament, call it like the under-25 and make it an extension of the under-20s.
Yeah.
Or the under-23. That would be fun. Yep. Plus, it's a real chance to get to know the new stars in a better light. That would be kind of cool. But in the end, look, I've always said this, and maybe I'm going to be proven wrong once it rolls around, but I'm fine with the fact that pros aren't going.
Yeah. Unless they lose, unless they get just blown out early on. And then suddenly we're all going to change our tune. Can we have Crosby back, please?
I will say this. I'm drinking water from a glass that on the back says it was inspired by John Montgomery's historic golden ride.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going back to Vancouver, it was in skeleton.
Yeah.
There's now a commemorative glass to this guy.
It's old tomorrow beer.
A gold medal in skeleton.
Yeah.
So anything's possible.
But we loved it because afterwards, he was chugging
beer.
He was chugging beer, enjoying himself.
I always wondered if that moment was set up.
If it was, that's a really smart setup.
Pretty good, right?
If it was him or a PR person or whoever it was, if it was set up, good for you.
Some super smart TV person who just says, hey, you're wandering through the village. Here's a pitcher of beer. Go at it.
Something tells me Keith Pelly was somehow involved. Scott Baines writes in, why do we drive on a parkway yet park on a driveway? Can't really answer that because, as mentioned before, Bob doesn't drive.
Self-driving cars, though.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Here's a tough one. And this just came in on my Facebook account. I actually put this up on Facebook. I never go on Facebook. Dominic Duell writes in, which of the Friday the 13th movies would come the closest to describing your own life? What a hard question to answer.
I'm going to jump ahead and say Freddy versus Jason because you and I have always had this debate.
Yep.
And I feel like you and I are Freddy versus Jason in a lot of ways. You're a Jason guy.
Yes.
And you're the hockey wearing, machete wielding man of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always argued that Freddy was the Euro French art star.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Which is more my tastes.
Yeah.
Like you like a good old fashioned North American horror movie.
100%.
I tend to like mine a little bit arty. A little bit arty. Mm-hmm. I mean that way. So, like you love It Follows. I love The Witch.
Mm-hmm.
You love Freddy.
Yeah. No.
Freddy. I mean, you love Jason.
Jason.
I love Freddy.
Michael Myers. But also, I mean, I love The Exorcist. I don't know what that would, which one that would count as, but
so that's my answer. My life is most like Freddy versus Jason.
I'm gonna go with Friday the 13th Part 4, because much like a young Corey Feldman, he lived in terror of Jason and always tried to defeat him. From a small child on to as a 42-year-old, I have fear over Jason Voorhees. Let's see. Pull up the list. Cujo writes in, should all major sporting event games start no later than 7 p.m. Eastern? Looks like another late night, even for me in Vancouver. And this from at Dale Cadeau. And yes, yes, and more yes. In fact, I want the games to start earlier. I love, like, just the odd times, the novelty, you know, when the sport is on at 2 in the afternoon. It's what I love about American Thanksgiving or, you know, sometimes afternoon baseball. I love novelty-timed sporting events.
Now, this is a super East Coasty question because on the West Coast, they get 10 a.m. football all the time.
It's the best. It's one of my, like, just, it's one of the main reasons why I'd want to live on the West Coast. Is
for 10 a.m. football?
10 a.m. football, but beyond that, like imagine the World Series and you're living in California. It's going to be, you know, 8:45 and the game is done. You still have your night ahead of you. Also, if you're a fan of East Coast hockey in the playoffs, go to a bar because all American bars have, you know, it's all about happy hour. Well, that game is on from 4 to 7 p.m. their time, which is also happy hour time. I was in San Diego watching NHL playoff games and paying like $1.50 a beer. It was glorious.
This is so sad. Not about you, but about me. Because for you, you've timed out your happy hour drinking calendar.
Yeah.
And also how you have so much more time to have fun that night once the sports are over. And all I can think of is just get to bed.
Just get to bed. Well, also, just doing the morning show, I got to tell you, like early games are the best.
I have done the morning.
Yes, you have.
Circuit before and mm-hmm. As you have, too. And it's not for me.
No, it is.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. You got to.
It's everybody does shift work. You are a Macko and Cause hero because yeah. It is not easy.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Donnie writes in, and I swear to you, Bob, I did not set this question up.
Okay.
Who are the psychopaths that like to ruin everything by putting raisins in it? Cookies, tarts, brownies, bread, and so on. I got to tell you, Donnie, that is a fantastic question.
All right, so why don't I just clear out? Because anything I say is going to obviously be paled in comparison to your quasi-psychotic rant about raisins.
Bob, there I was, small child, no older than 7 years old, at my papa's house. And there on the kitchen counter was his glass container filled with joy, filled with cookies. And as a chubby wee little lad, I went and put my sausage-like fingers into the jar and I grabbed a cookie, a Xanadu of baked goodness. And I crammed that cookie into my mouth. But then seconds later, Bob, my joy turned to terror as I realized that was not a chocolate chip. No, 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 no. That was a raisin. That was an undercover chocolate chip. And I spat that cookie out. And ever since then, hated the raisin, the consistency, the taste. And I know there's hypocrisy because raisins, you know, part of wine and just, you know, with grapes and shriveling and all that. I understand that. But the raisin is disgusting. And I won't go on long about this. Or longer.
I was about to say a little late for that.
A little bit late for that. I'll just say this. If you ever want to know the feelings that the planet have for raisins, go to a bakery. Don't go early in the morning. Go near the end of the day. Go look at the cookie aisles. See which aisle is still left. And you know what that's going to be left? It's going to be the raisin cookie. The same way at the end of a party, what pizza is left? The vegetarian pizza. So I could do 100 things, but that is my main one.
That was peak cause in a lot of ways.
It really was.
Long on time, short on point. Ultimately acknowledged your own hypocrisy.
Yes. And, I am self-aware.
But also like completely comfortable with it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel strongly about this. Do I think about this all the time this way? No, I don't. But it doesn't matter because I feel strongly about this.
Moving ahead.
And just moving ahead, right?
Moving forward.
Yes, I could stop and analyze what I think, but mm-hmm. It would kill my filibuster.
Yeah.
The raisin is ingenious, and here is the genius of raisins. And I guess, again, this is peak Mackwitz because I bring everything back to the difficulty of being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
But my kid right now has 700 chocolates in the house.
Lucky, and all peanut-free, right?
Yeah, all peanut-free.
Good, good,
absolutely.
Good. Lucky.
We are very judicious, yeah. And so it's pretty hard to sell normal food right now. Right? Because yeah. she is sitting next to a garbage bag full of treats. Yeah. And they're hers. She yeah. went out and got them. She worked for them.
Yes.
I can't throw them out. She no. worked for them. They yeah. would be the wrong message to send. So how do you get a kid to enjoy normal food? Something with even a little health to it.
Mm-hmm. That is difficult.
Right. So the raisin is nature's perfect compromise. Nature is like the perfectly collectively bargained agreement mm-hmm. where everybody walks away happy. You get a treat and you get some fiber. How many things can you say that about, Matt? Things that are actually good for you? Look, and they're bloody sweet. Who's kidding who? Like, it is way closer to dessert. In fact, if anything, I would think you would love it, Matt, because what it does is, because your big thing is, look, I don't want to feel guilty about my choices.
Nope.
Right? I just want to like what I like, and I don't want to feel guilty about my choices. Raisins, you could have a big bowl of them.
Pause for 1 second. Yep. You couldn't see it, but Amy, my girlfriend, head was down, she's making meatballs, and she was nodding her head in complete agreement with what you were saying. How dare you? Right. Not that Bob's wrong.
So I'm surprised you don't like them, because they are a way of saying, yeah, I had fruit, I had grapes, get off my back. But ultimately, it's a bag of candy.
They taste gross.
Well, look, I can't debate taste with you, because, you know, some people like pineapple on pizza. I'm not one of them.
I'm not one of them either.
You know, there's no such thing as, when it comes to taste, I can't tell you what you like or what you don't like. But I will say this, you are missing the boat, because it is the quintessential cause food. All of the pleasure, none of the guilt.
No house.
Raisin Bran, Matt, disgusting. Is a healthy dessert. Ugh. And a healthy breakfast.
If my parents said, and I said, hey, Mom, what's for dessert? And she said, Raisin Bran, I'd slap that bowl out of her hands and say, do better.
Matt, I stand by my point, and ultimately, I don't have an answer for Donnie.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a little bit out of my pay grade to say who did this. I don't know.
Another one came in, and it's funny, like just literally seconds ago. So I'm experiencing this the same as you.
Aren't we in the future?
Oh, yeah, we are in the future.
So this came in literally seconds ago, 4 days ago.
Have you seen Looper?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
One of the great parts is when Joseph Gordon-Levitt is trying to get Bruce Willis to explain how the whole time thing works. And Bruce Willis says, don't try to think about it too much, kid. It's just going to hurt your brain.
Right.
Which was brilliant.
The best. So, Rian Johnson. Yes. Rian Johnson directed and wrote that.
Oh, so good. So that's my answer to you about the future and the past.
I love it.
What serial killer, real or fictional, would have made the best sports radio host?
Oh, geez.
My first thought, and I forget his name.
Fictional or real?
Fictional or real. Really, either or. I forget the Bateman character, his first name, in American Psycho. I think he'd make a great one, because in the middle of it, he would just go, do you like Huey Lewis in the news? Like, just, and like that guy could talk.
Sussudio.
Yeah.
So much greater than Phil Collins' earlier work with Genesis, which often was artistic, pretentious, and grating.
Why do you have that axe? To kill you, Alan. Yes, I think...
Okay, so you're going with American Psycho, Christian Bale.
Yeah. Really
interesting pick. Yeah. I'm going to go with Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Because he would have his own catchphrase.
Yeah.
That little sound he makes with his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves wine, right? Do you know anybody right now who is really bright, sometimes needs to be muzzled, and goes on the air and talks about loving wine all the time?
Yes, I do. Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann. Gas bags, both of them. And the great thing about Anthony Hopkins, he'd be talking about like the Browns, and he's like, yes, I ate the Browns draft with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
See?
Yeah.
It's already done.
That is a good one.
If you find me a successful sports radio host that loves wine and food and ultimately wants to talk about themselves rather than sports, you tell me where I can find that guy and I will show you a successful show.
Damn it. In my house without a mirror, where could I find such a person?
Actually, I shouldn't bust you about the food. You're the wine and I'm the food.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm probably closer to Hannibal Lecter in real life than you are.
Also, and yeah, because if I'm going to pick my one wine, it would not be a Chianti. And I like Chianti.
And fava beans are overrated.
Yeah. I mean, I see why.
Guy has no taste.
Yeah, I see the pairing, but I don't get it.
Great question. I feel good that we were able to rally and answer it.
Yeah.
But no, that's using your noodle there. Who was that?
That was coming in from, actually, the same guy, Dominic Doul, who just started.
Dominic Doul?
D-O-U-L-L.
D-O-U-L-L. Sounds like dual. Yeah, probably we'll go with dual. We'll go anyway, dual. You're on the roll call of heroes, buddy. That was a great question.
Last question, and this because you know we're keeping this episode a little bit shorter. And this one is sort of a big picture question.
Okay.
Harvey Weinstein.
All right.
Went from Hollywood, the world of Hollywood, NPR. Now you see like the Drew McGarry, you know, doing a long apology from stuff from his past. Matt Taibbi. And by the way, I'm not comparing these guys to Harvey Weinstein. Let me say that over and over and over again. But just now that you see them writing these pieces saying, I've just things I did in the past, I'm not proud of. When will this bleed into sports? When will coaches, assistant coaches, general managers, owners, players, when do we suddenly see, because what's happening is all these women, all these horrible victims now are suddenly starting to feel empowered because of the first wave of very brave women and incredible investigative journalism is creating a world where we're now seeing these women and men as well. It's not just women, it's men as well, coming out and telling their stories. When does this enter the world of sports?
Well, it kind of already has, but the sports world, like every other world, tends to put the shaming of women first and then the act of, like, everybody is entitled to due process. And I think no matter what goals we set ourselves as a culture, we have to keep due process in mind. There's no question. But think about Ezekiel Elliott and the sexual abuse allegations that were around there. And the first thing everybody always moves to do is discredit the woman's story. Mm-hmm. Right? Patrick Kane, and there were questions. And the first thing you do is seek to discredit the story.
Yep.
Now,
Greg Hardy as well. And also sports has the interesting, it's the wrong word, but also has the facet of if the player is great, there's probably going to be more things happening to keep the true story away from the public.
Well, and what you're talking about is sort of the levers of power that would, because somebody who's a multi-million dollar athlete is a billion dollar asset.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of buffers in place to protect a billion dollar asset.
Yeah.
Jordan back in the day, I think, at one point he was estimated his economic footprint was something like $17 billion globally. It's astounding, but your point's a good one. There's a lot of ways to protect these people. I would say it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm. And I don't, by the way, I don't have an answer to this.
No timeline, but it just feels inevitable.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Dikembe Mutombo and all the guys who went to the Gold Club back in the day and there was the scandal?
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Right. Climbing Mount Mutombo and all those stories. I remember we were on Off the Record when that story first came out.
Yeah.
Thinking like, this is going to be like the Clinton scandal, but for sports. And it never was.
It never was. Imagine that. That's a good point. Imagine that in 2017. Camera phones, TMZ. There would be just, it would be completely different.
I think that, I mean, if I've learned anything from the last couple months and Harvey Weinstein, I mean, you try to learn as you go along, but just the...
we're all learning. Everything is changing.
And the Me Too campaign, and just when you see the effects of this. Like, I'm shocked when I talk to the women in my life, the adult women in my life, about how prevalent these stories are and how they're not even addressed even amongst your closest people. That blew me away. So I assume that whoever asked this question, like, it's going to be coming there the way it is everywhere else. And it'll force... There's always been this sort of latent thread of male bonding that runs through sports. And some of it is really healthy. And there's a bunch of it that's really unhealthy.
It's like anything else. At a certain point, any sort of emotion is good. But then it goes off into these dark tangents.
Or even just self-definition based on gender that allows power structures to continue that are ultimately unfair towards a lot of people.
Yep.
Or criminal, for that matter. So it'd be really curious to see the way the sports world reacts, because the sports world is very protective of the concept of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't have an answer for that. Like, that's a really broad, open-ended question.
Yeah.
But it'll be very curious. Sports traditionally has been one of the slowest places to move forward.
But eventually it's going to happen. You see, you know,
slow but powerful.
Oh yeah. No, right? What I'm
like
saying
once it actually hits sports, things tend to hit, you know, then it accelerate.
Once it finally hits the coast, like it took a while for Daenerys to finally land. But once she finally did, you know, the bleep went down.
It's weird though, right? Like my mom was an Argos cheerleader, you know, and so I grew up like with a cheerleader in the house.
My sister-in-law as well.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
But when I watch cheerleaders on the sidelines now, it feels weird to me. Like, I was at the Argos game with Naylor and Simmons and those guys a couple weeks ago, and our seats were right in front of where the cheerleaders are. And you know, there were also men in that group too, but the whole thing seemed to me very archaic.
Yeah.
Like, this really doesn't need to belong here. Like, I don't know why this is.
If I woke up tomorrow and someone said there are no more cheerleaders, I'm like, it would not affect my life. In fact, actually, the only thing I would say is I hope that all, you know, the men and women that were part in it in high school and university, they had something else to replace that. Because for a lot of people, it's, you know, it's part of a team, it's part of a sport, it's physicality. And yes, there is a lecherous side of it as well, especially when it gets to the more professional level. But if they said, that, how much is it going to impact you in the world of sports? Zero.
That's a really good question, whoever threw that out, though, because we have a tendency to think of sports as its hermetically sealed own little world.
Not anymore. I mean, look at how it is with politics, with Trump and Papa John's and, you know, and everything else.
Yeah, to this point, I think we've always treated sports as a place where stuff doesn't happen, and we don't want stuff to happen there. And, you know, to the point you just made, I remember we talked about what's the biggest scandal ahead for sports, and I said it's going to be race. And maybe in 2 years it becomes this. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll happen right away because there is that lag time. I don't know. It's a great question, though.
Because eventually it's going to happen because what's happening, it's not about, because you had some right-wing people going, see, Hollywood, they're evil. I'm like, no. What this is, it's not about your political background, and it's not about race. It's about power. And it's about men with power abusing their power, both, you know, man on female or man on man, and it's about abuse of power. And it's not about politics. It's not about race.
You know, to your point, Maddie, about power and race and fairness, I don't know that the gender issues in sports will ever really be addressed until you start having more women who are actually in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches, managers, when teams and infrastructures are built and they represent the culture more accurately, because it is a guy's world.
Yeah.
It's a guy's world in so many ways. And I've never really understood that.
Well, I think it's because, like, say, football, so much of it comes from people who played football. And, you know, and then they get around, like, if you play football, then you get around other coaches. And maybe your playing days are done and your relationship with the coach. And so even, it just sort of builds there.
I understand that. But even to talk about it, like, there was an article in, I guess it was The Atlantic the other day, about how Doris Burke's time has come. And she's become this great announcer. And she's, you know, at the forefront of a generation of talent. Although she's been doing this a really long time.
Yeah.
But it's weird that somebody like Doris Burke would be an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like saying it's weird that 50% of the population would have someone represent them to speak intelligently about sports.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Although that, like, statistically, that makes no sense.
But yeah. Oh, I agree. And it is getting better. Like, you look at SportsCenter on TSN. You don't even, you know, you don't even think about it anymore. But, you know, it's so many women are part of it. And, you know, on the different SportsCenter shows.
Cassie Campbell Pascal is one of the most underrated talents in this country.
Mm-hmm.
She played at a high level.
Yep.
And she broadcasts at a high level. And I don't think that she gets the credit she deserves for intelligent commentary. When I talk to people who work around her, she's really, really smart, hardworking, and researched. And plus, she has her own sort of game experience to talk about what hockey is like.
Yeah.
I don't know that this country ever figured out what to do with her, because she should be a much more prominent member of the mainstream than she's ever been.
I would love...
Not that she isn't. She has that platform. But yeah, I feel like we don't champion her in the way that we probably should.
Hmm. I never, you know what? Never even thought about it. I'd love to see a lot of the women that were part of the Sochi, the Canadian hockey team. I'd love to, especially leading up for the next Olympics, because their stories will be fantastic.
I always wonder about Andy Petrillo, because sometimes I really, like, I get a thing, like, I get angry inside when I see that people treat it almost like it's cute that she talks sports. And I see that reaction sometimes from the public. And, you know, I hope that people respect the fact that she's smart and researched, and she's
hardworking
and super good broadcaster. Yeah. Like, she's a really good, in some ways, natural broadcaster, but I think she has a really strong work ethic. I never worked with her, but that's just what people say.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm with, you know, I see her all the time, and I would joke when she would have a day off. I'd be like, hey, lazy. Because, yeah, she's someone that's always working.
But I think there's a contingency that still thinks that it's adorable that a woman is hosting a Leaf show.
Yep. And, well, and that group is thankfully getting smaller. And that group is thankfully a dumb group.
I always respected Jeff McDonald, your still boss, but my former boss at TSN 1050 was, you know, I think for him it was important, if I'm just understanding, like, as I know him as a person, but I think it was important for him to say, like, we should have a woman who's on the air and talking hockey.
Yeah.
And great. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, we always had that attitude at Off the Record. We tried to hire women behind the scenes. I mean, as far as I know, I think we had the only female EA back in the late 90s at TSN on a hockey show. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but certainly we pushed for it early.
And actually, Landsberg and I were talking about it, well, I was going to say the other day, but a week ago, because this is evergreen, just Jennifer Hedger. One of, like, if you go back to look at the OTR guests in terms of best debut performance, her first time on the show, you're just like, she's got a career in this. And that was back in 2000. And I think we've been proven right.
So I guess
that's it.
Long answer to the question then. I don't know, but hopefully soon.
Do you have an outfit planned for your flight?
I don't, but I, unlike you, don't feel the need to dress up to go on air travel.
To me, it's not about, you know, it's not the best suit or tie. I don't wear a tie. But at the same point, when I see people in flip-flops, in practically pajama pants, I'm like, you're an adult, okay?
You know, there is a middle ground.
Of course.
But I do think there's nothing wrong with wearing something a little bit elasticy on a flight, because you expand when you're in the air. Like, we all do. This is not just simply me and my choices.
Are you a character from Willy Wonka, or suddenly you're like a giant blueberry?
No, but airfare, like, why do you think, like, everybody is uncomfortable at 35,000 feet, like, physically, because just your clothes don't fit the same. The air pressure changes things. You should dress comfortably.
Are you going to read or watch movies?
I'll watch movies. I always watch movies.
Nice.
By the way, did you just sneeze?
No, it was a cough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Always watch movies. And I try to watch bad movies.
It's not bad. I go.
No. Schlocky movies.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Schlocky movies.
Yes, it's been schlocky. And
something I would never go to the theater to see and spend $20 on.
Yeah. The only one I wasn't able to do, and because I did like 46 hours of flight there and back from my trip to New Zealand, I couldn't do Baywatch. Because I'd see it on other people's TV screens, on the other seats on the plane, and it looks so bad. I'm like, no, I'd rather just stare at an empty screen like Putty from Seinfeld than watch that movie.
I don't know what it is, but I tend to watch Sandra Bullock movies. You know how people say they have a home spouse and like a work spouse?
Yeah.
That's like a thing. I have a plane spouse, and it is Sandra Bullock. I try to spend at least 2 hours per flight with her.
Underrated when we look at the pantheon of great comedic actors, she is on the underrated list.
She's really, really good. Yeah. And I recommend to everybody her movies with Melissa McCarthy.
The Heat, fantastic.
Heat is so good.
So good. Bob, have a great trip.
I'm having one right now.
As I should say, I hope your trip is going well.
Going great, Matt.
Bye, Bob.
And wait, we should point out before we say goodbye, we're going to do Friday this week.
Yes,
because I get back in Thursday night, so we're going to do a live one on Friday.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll do one Friday because, you know, if I got to get Jonas Siegel to guest host, that's just ratings death. So much better to get you back here again.
Yeah, God forbid we should get someone who knows about the Leafs to talk about the Leafs on this podcast.
There's plenty of places to go for facts and, you know, real information. That's not why you come here. You come here to learn one thing.
Raisins
are bad, and Back to the Future. Shame on them for not killing Hitler.
Well, that's what I get out of it.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.